Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. This is our talkback segment. We make sure that we have time throughout the entire program to address the issues and concerns and questions of people in this audience. There's a number to call, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And you can get in and ask your question or make your statement. You can listen over the internet. There's iTunes is one way. You can Stitcher app. You can call in on the telephone. In fact, good news, on Friday we were told that of 2,500 radio broadcasting systems, we're number one in South and North America, approaching 10 million minutes of people listening. That's a lot. And we're ninth, I think, in the entire world. So if you want to ever listen, just dial these numbers. Please write them down. You never know when you're going to be traveling somewhere. You won't be near a computer. You won't be near a radio. 401-347-0456. 401-347-0456 or 712-432-7231. 712-432-7231. Now today, the latest on vitamin C. Some really good material based upon some very promising results. Then we're going to look at depression and what it does to increase your risk of heart disease. Also, for U.S. women, if you're over the ages of 40, your skin cancer risk goes up 2,400% in the last 30 years. So you really have to pay attention. Also, throughout life, our brains fine-tune their wiring. Who knew? Well, you hear it first here. And eating yogurt may reduce type 2 diabetes risk, according to a Cambridge University study. What good is gardening? I'll tell you that, and a lot more on health issues. Then from our public health segment, we're going to look at the work of Allison McCabe on America's number one prescription sleep aid. It was just on 60 Minutes, and they're giving a complete different perspective. Could, quote, trigger zombies, murder, and other disturbing behavior. Now, of course, that doesn't mean the living dead. It means someone who doesn't have the emotions, doesn't have the cognitive skills to make reasonable choices. This is a very important piece of research. Also today, we'll take a look from our environmental segment about coal and how many people is it killing. You'll be amazed. From our environmental segment, swarms of earthquakes shake up the shale gas fields. Tremors in Texas, Holland, and around the world are caused by gas hydrofracking. I'll tell you how bad that's getting and why you should be opposing gas hydrofracking everywhere that you can. And also from our public health segment today, what the cancer industry does not want you to know about chemotherapy and radiation, from Dave Milovic from Prevent Disease. If time permits, we're going to hit on a very important subject. Also, I was so concerned when I saw this segment on 60 Minutes, how superficial their reporting is. We're going to talk about the lies about poverty, how they've created myths to dehumanize the poor. Wasn't even touched upon and should have been from Truth Out. So we have a lot to share, plus your phone calls. Let's begin. First, a little background. I was speaking with a Dr. Frederick Klinner near the end of his career down in North Carolina. He had been using quietly vitamin C intravenous at 50,000 milligrams and was getting some remarkable results, especially with cancer. But he also knew that because it was not a proprietary patented drug and it was just his own practice, that he would only bring scorn upon himself. Why? Why would someone who's doing something good end up being attacked? Well, that's a separate story that I will deal with when I talk about the cancer industry a little later. But in any case, He said, just remember, you've got to get more than what can be taken orally, because when you take it orally, several things happen. First, the body has to convert it into ascorbate. It can't use ascorbic acid as such. And also, you're going to hit bowel tolerance. Well, I found out that you actually hit acidic intolerance first, meaning you can only take a certain amount of vitamin C before your hydrochloric acid in the stomach reacts to it, and the intestines react, creating diarrhea. Now, for each person, it's a little different. It might be at 500 milligrams, 1,000 milligrams, but I've seen people, myself included, take thousands of milligrams at one time. And if you're sick, well, you're going to be able to hold a lot more. If you're very sick, your body will take a lot more in. But by and large, you still are not going to come close to what you can get in intravenous. And Linus Pauling, the only American to ever win two unshared Nobel Prizes, one in chemistry and one in peace, he and Professor Sokroff won the Nobel Prizes. And they both said that all those nuclear explosions in the 1950s were going to cause massive cancer and immune dysfunction. They were right. But Linus Pauling was taking a massive amount of vitamin C, about 18,000 to 20,000 milligrams orally a day. He was a very big believer in it. Now, at his clinic, I was out there, and I actually saw them killing viruses, including what Dr. Jawala said was the HIV virus, with quercetin and vitamin C. I also met with, several times, a Dr. Robert Cathcart. Dr. Cathcart was treating more persons with AIDS-defining illness, but specifically using intravenous vitamin C at 50,000 milligrams. When I asked him why 50,000, he said that's what Frederick Klenner was using. But he was having remarkable results, better than any doctor in the world, when it came to pneumocystis crinii pneumonia. The number one cause of death in persons with AIDS-defining illnesses was that. And he was helping hundreds, if not thousands, of patients. And I asked him, why don't you go higher? Well, we don't know what it would do. So I began to do research, and in the office, using myself as a guinea pig, I went up to 200,000 milligrams a day, every day. People would not know that while I was doing my radio shows and counseling people and doing writing, I'd be sitting there with an IV drip. And every week I'd have my entire blood chemistry measured, I mean very comprehensive medical exam, just to see what it would do in a person that's never smoked or drank or taken drugs or even medications, athlete, marathoner, ultra-marathoner. What would it do? And when I saw how it enhanced my well-being, I then started advocating it, and in time, thousands of people began to get high doses with remarkable results. But we were told couldn't happen. In fact, Linus Pauling said, they'll never accept that intravenous vitamin C is important because it'll challenge the pharmaceutical model. He was right. They attacked him. They attacked vitamin C. They attacked everything. It didn't matter what proof you had. It was never proof enough. And that's a lesson we must all learn. If you're not a part of the official truth of any institution, no matter what that institution is, A, you have no power. B, you will never be allowed to be a policymaker nor an opinion leader. But lastly, you'll be discredited if what you're doing in any way deflects from the power and control that those in the paradigm have. For example, those that suggest we should take our money out of big banks and put them into small credit unions, or like a Bank of North Dakota, they're correct. But be inside one of those big banks, be sitting on their board and advocate that, and you'll be fired. That said, here's the latest to show that Linus Pauling, Robert Cathcart, Dr. Frederick Klenner, and myself were all right. So think of the thousands of lives we've saved, and think of how many died at the altar of official truth. This is from the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Patients. I've published, 60 articles in here. This is the latest. Not my article, this is from one of their contributors. Quote, new study identifies the optimal dose of intravenous vitamin C for future anti-cancer clinical trials. Quote, the use of vitamin C to treat cancer patients first became popular in the 1970s That's wrong. It was the 1950s, as a result of the work of Nobel Prize winner Linus Pauling. However, studies conducted with oral dose supplements did not demonstrate any clinical benefit in cancer patients, most likely due to the finding that the levels of orally administered vitamin C delivered to a patient's bloodstream were considerably lower than the levels needed to kill cancer cells in either test tube or animal models. Recent studies in which IV, that's intravenous, vitamin C resulted in higher levels delivered to the patient's bloodstream suggest vitamin C may in fact promote anti-cancer activity. A research team at Cancer Treatment Centers of America, here's the catch. they're official. So, mind you, when all the other doctors, Dr. Robert Atkins, Dr. Michael Schachter, Dr. Warren Levin, when all these other doctors were treating thousands of patients using intravenous vitamin C and getting good results, that didn't count. But the moment you're doing something in the official realm, suddenly that's when truth becomes first and foremost. That day, everyone's learning. Quote, led by these two doctors, recently completed a phase one clinical trial to determine the pharmacokinetic safety and tolerability of IV high-dose vitamin C levels that could potentially achieve the serum concentrations adequate for anti-cancer activity. The results have been published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer, Chemotherapy, and Pharmacology. As noted in the study, a previous phase 1 IV trial stopped dose escalation at approximately 56 grams, that's 56 house milligrams, when peak blood levels approached 26 mmHg, and a level that inhibited tumor growth in mice. However, 30 to 40 ascorbic acid in mice only partially inhibited. Their 70 to 80 gram delivered blood concentrations of 49 mmHg. These levels appear to have a greater potential for producing anti-cancer activity in future studies. Quote, while this may be the baseline for treatment potential, said the doctor, it suggests we are on the right track. The use of IV administered vitamin C in combination with cytotoxic chemotherapy is further encouraged. Well, I don't encourage it, and they have no proof whatsoever their cytotoxic chemotherapy is going to benefit anyone. So now when they use vitamin C and they're getting benefit, I can promise you it will not be the vitamin C that gets the credit. It'll be the chemotherapy. Well, they're okay, but they're half the dosage that they're going to get the real benefits. But at least it's a beginning. It's a start. And that's important. Now, separately, this is from the Los Angeles Times on the same topic, but a completely different study. Quote, scientists have identified a simple, inexpensive compound that made cancer drugs more effective in mice and helped human patients weather the toxic effects of chemotherapy. But even as they touted their experimental results, they acknowledged that their remedy was unlikely to inspire vigorous and expensive research necessary to win regulatory approval and join the ranks of mainstream medicine. The drug in question is vitamin C. When absorbed from foods such as oranges, strawberries, broccoli, and kale, it feeds neurotransmitters and helps the body make collagen, among other important functions. It has also gained a cult following as an alternative form of cancer treatment thanks to Linus Pauling, a two-time winner of the Nobel Prize. Pauling's contention that large doses of vitamin C could prevent and treat most cancers could not be supported by clinical trials. His discredited claim shut down research for decades. And, quote, there's been a bias since the late 70s that vitamin C cancer treatment is worthless and a waste of time, said the journal Science Translational Medicine. Now, quote, we're overcoming old biases. But that's only part of the problem. Even if more studies confirm that vitamin C can fight cancer, someone would have to steer it through the FDA lengthy approval process. Vitamin C cannot be patented, so pharmaceutical companies have no incentive to play their usual role. Okay, let's dissect this for a moment. Well, who exactly discredited Linus Pauling on vitamin C? He won every debate he was in. How many peer review articles do we have? Do I have? Over 30,000 on the chemistry, safety, and efficacy of vitamin C. all showing its significance at being antiviral, antibacterial, immune-stimulating, and most importantly, it increases the natural killer cell activity, the existing body's natural immune response to cancer cells. Linus Pauling was never discredited. And as far as a cult following, no. Just the opposite. The cult is all of orthodox medicine, because 90% of all the treatments currently used have never been held to a standard of purity with a absolute gold standard of double-blind placebo control. If you doubt me, ask them to show you the studies where they compared one group of 1,000 patients with pancreatic cancer or breast cancer or colorectal cancer with another group of 1,000 patients that received a high dose of vitamin C and another group that received placebo. You can't. There are no such studies. Show me the studies in surgery, double-blind placebo-controlled. You can't. Show me the studies in psychiatry, mental health, for depression, anxiety. You can't. All these studies they talk about, once again, this is the arrogance, this is the conceit that kills more people each year than all of the diseases by individual groups, heart disease, stroke, cancer, and diabetes. Not one of those will kill as many people as the medical profession, and we've proven that. And yet they continue to use synthetic hormone replacement therapy in women, 10 million women a year, knowing it'll increase their risk of breast cancer, colorectal cancer, stroke, heart attack, and yet that is considered acceptable. They will drug children by first making up diseases like parental authority disorder. There is no such thing, but they put it in the diagnostical manual so doctors will do it. They've diagnosed six-month-old babies with bipolar because the baby cries and laughs. So they've got it just ass backwards, but the Los Angeles Times gets everything ass backwards. No one in American media has ever had the courage, not one human being in all of major media has had the courage to take on the medical industrial complex, because if they did, they would see it for the fraud that it is. Outside of emergency medicine, it is worthless, dangerous, number one cause of death. So before Los Angeles Times, you talk on a topic out of complete ignorance, why don't you do your homework? Oh, I forgot, you're a journalist. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to be propagandist. Nothing better than pimping for Big Pharma. A criminal organization is Big Pharma. Oh, did I make a mistake? Well, let's see. Los Angeles Times, before you say Linus Pauling was discredited, why don't you take a look at the people that advertise in your paper? Now, why don't you go to LexisNexis and see how many tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of lawsuits they have settled for billions upon billions of dollars? How many people died because they knew they had bad drugs, like Vioxx? You took ads in your paper for Vioxx? I checked. But you kill 60,000 Americans with a drug they knew was dangerous, you pay a $5 billion fine, and your reputation is sanitized. That's American journalism. That's how it works. So Pauling was right. All the other holistic doctors were right. The naturopaths were right. Everyone who was using it was right. But these are not cultists. These are people who had the courage to go beyond the sanctity and protection and certainty of security within their own paradigm and open themselves up to the truth. Good for them. And so that's where we add on that. Now, if you have depression, according to University College London, published in the peer-reviewed journal, European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, you're at a greater risk of coronary heart disease. Quote, the investigators say previous research that has assessed the link between depression and cardiovascular disease is diverse, and that some studies have shown strong associations between the amount of depression and your risk of dying of heart attack. Quote, this means that vascular disease it's a serious condition, and if you're depressed, you put yourself at greater risk of heart disease. For women, skin cancer, according to the Mayo Clinic, they studied the incidence of skin cancer from 1970 to 2009, and found that if you're over 40, you have a 2,400% risk of skin cancer. My suggestion is take your antioxidants before you go out in the sun and when you come back in. Vitamin E, vitamin C, alpha-lipoic acid, very important. According to the Medical College of Georgia, high sodium intake correlates with obesity and inflammation, published in the American Heart Association's journal, and also recommending stay with less than 1,500 milligrams of sodium daily. That was published in the peer journal Pediatrics also. Quote, the majority of studies in humans show that the more food you eat, the more salt you consume, the fatter you are, and you also increase your risk of hypertension. Finally, before we take our first calls, the white matter microstructure, the communications pathways of the brain, continues to develop mature as one ages. Studies link age-related differences in white matter microstructure to specific cognitive abilities in childhood and adulthood. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Biological Psychiatry. Now, what this means in lay language is this. If we continue to challenge ourselves by learning languages, playing musical instruments, crossword puzzles, any type of activity that requires us to be creative, not passive. Television is passive. Movies are passive. Most music, except classical music, is passive. Then we can continue to allow our brains to be fine-tuned. And that's important. Also, I mentioned yogurt at the beginning. According to a new study from the University of Cambridge Medical Research Council, consuming 4.5 standard little jars of yogurt a week could reduce the risk of developing type 2 diabetes by more than a quarter. That's good. My suggestion is that you use non-dairy yogurt, and that's easy to get. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take some calls. We have a lot of people on the line right now, so if you're having a little trouble getting through, please be patient. Let's say hello to Paula from Florida. Hi, Paula.
Hello, Gary. It is Paula from Florida today. How are you?
Great.
I had a quick question about the benefits of eating kumquat. I live in the kumquat capital of Florida, and I was just wondering if there's lots of health benefits and vitamin C in those little round orbs.
Yes, eat the skin, the seed, chew it all up or blend it all up. The kumquat is a little tiny, very bitter orange. But in the skin, you have phytonutrients. In the seed, you have phytonutrients that are antiseptic, antibacterial, and antiviral. And you can't take a lot of them. My suggestion is to take a handful and throw it into a smoothie where you have maybe diluting agents. You could have your protein, banana, peaches, berries. Taking them by themselves, most people will never eat a kumquat. But taking them with something, not a problem. And they're very good in vitamin C, too.
Very good. Thank you very much.
All the best.
You
kumquats, K-U-M-Q-U-A-T. From North Carolina, let's say hello to Chris.
Hello, Gary. Yoga studios, hot yoga, getting popular now. Some of the state-of-the-art places are using infrared coming out of the ceiling to make the room hot. Could you help settle a friendly debate in the household if this is great or bad?
It's just a marketing scheme. The guy was smart enough to do what is called differentiation, meaning he brought out the idea of doing yoga where you sweat. And then, well, let's sweat. And then someone else said, well, let's sweat and let's bring some ultraviolet. It is not bad to have infrared in a sauna. It's positive. But when you're doing yoga, unless you're doing it naked and people are not, it is not healthy to sweat that much. First, if you have high blood pressure, if you have unrecognized high blood pressure, undiagnosed, you could put yourself at risk of a stroke. Secondly, unless you educate people about what the body is doing when it's perspiring, how it's trying to cool itself, but also it is causing an enormous amount of energy to be used. The mitochondria are, in effect, using up the energy, the ATP, adenosine triphosphate, which is what causes the energy in the little energy factories of your body. And so you're actually depleting your energy. Did yoga by itself? Some yoga I disagree with because it's dangerous. But if you say anything from India is dangerous, everybody goes, oh, no, 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 that's not possible. And I'm going to say, yes, 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 it is. Stop getting caught up in the whole idea that somehow the people of India have something that is so unique that we can't challenge it. Everything should be open to challenge. You mean we've been oversold? You've been oversold. You don't need to sweat when you're doing yoga. You don't need the infrared. You don't need all the different poses, some of which are actually harmful. And a whole lot of that is cult run. And but if you're looking for someone to teach yoga or do yoga with you where it's just helping you to stretch, to relax, then you can benefit from it. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of people sweating in a very hot room. Well, what if one of those people are shedding viruses? What if one of them has hepatitis or herpes? Is someone wiping up the sweat with hydrogen peroxide or alcohol afterwards? Are they sterilizing the environment? Is anyone taking anyone's blood pressure? Hope that answers your question.
Thanks much, Gary. Appreciate it. Bye.
Okay. Pauline from Queens. Hi, Pauline.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for that commentary. I am Chinese, and I'm ashamed of the Chinese. I'm only, you know, born, but I'm born here, and I really love what you say. You have the truth when you say it. My question has to do with this winter. You know how people have very excessive dry skin? Is there nutrients that we need to be taking that only happens during, you know, winter?
Yes. First, if you exercised regularly, that will help produce more of the sebum. And then if you took certain essential fatty acids, black currant seed oil, the oil of primrose, flax seed oil, all are good, and coconut oil. Those are your big oils. Then the omega-3 fatty acids and the black cumin seed oil. That for inflammation. The others because it'll help your skin. Then massage your skin before you go to bed at night, lightly with coconut oil, organic raw coconut oil. Now, the nutrients that are important are vitamin A, the B complex with folic acid, and vitamin C with quercetin. Those are your big skin nutrients. The more berries you eat, the healthier skin, and a normal balance to the moisture. Because you're changing moisture in the air, you're going from where it was far, far higher level of humidity, to where it's dry, and generally the heat dries out the air. So you could also put a moisturizer, something that vaporizes into the room and therefore allows for higher humidity in the wintertime. Okay? All the best to you. And we're going to take a brief break, come back, and continue taking your calls. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And I'm going to take on some other topics, including when we come back, the five top herbs for women and why women should be taking them on a daily basis. Then I'm going to take a look at America's number one prescription sleep aid and what's wrong with it. And also why you should think twice before eating pork. And why is it that we have a medical industrial complex that denies the virtue of all natural healing, intuition, spiritual values completely? It's not scientific. Yeah, well, your whole field's not scientific. But I'll tell you how it happened, when it happened, and who was behind it right after these messages.
Well, what's
welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. And we have a lot to share. From our environmental segment, this is from Countercurrents. The coal in China cuts the lifespan by 2.5 billion years lost from people's lives. That's right. China's policy of giving free coal for heating to residents in the area north of the major Huai River has contributed to cutting 5.5 years of life off a person. Okay, well, you're dealing with 500 million residents just in northern China. And since they've been given this coal, and they're losing 5.5 years, that's 2.5 billion years from their lives. And that was a study of researchers from China, the U.S., and Israel. And China is one of the most polluted countries in the world because they burn coal, and they're not going to stop. And coal has some very serious implications. Quote from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, life expectancies are about 5.5 years lower in the north owing to an increased incidence of cardiorespiratory death. The policy had the laudable goal of providing indoor heat had disastrous consequences for health. Another thing that has disastrous consequences for all of us is gas hydrofracking. This is the latest from Andrea Nikefork. Swarms of earthquakes shake up shale gas fields. Quote, the locals call it incoming, and some compare the violence of the tremors to living in a war zone. Others say it's like having their homes hit by a truck. The scene is North Texas, home of the Barnett Shale, the largest unconventional gas field in the United States. Unconventional means gas hydrofracking. Their industry, often touted as the new engine of the U.S. economy, has punctured and fractured the landscape with 17,000 gas wells, as well as thousands of disposable sites to get rid of related toxic fluids. It's North Texas where the unconventional gas industry, together with what it calls the safe and proven practice of hydraulic fracturing, has been making unconventional earth-shattering headlines. In the last 3 months, the community of Azle, located just northwest of Fort Worth, has suffered a swarm of earthquakes. More than 30. It's cracked the foundations of houses, frightened local residents, created sinkholes, and raised concerns about property values. Quote, we're sitting there at 1140. It rumbled right on through the house, said one resident. And, quote, it feels like a truck hits the back of the house and the whole house just shakes. So it's something. In many respects, those tremors are happening everywhere around the world. In Oklahoma, Wyoming, Montana, those are causing earthquakes. It used to be, okay, they'll cause a little tiny earthquake. No, some of these are 3.6. That's a major earthquake. So tell Governor Cuomo, we have more than 100 studies that are non-industry supported and funded that shows why if you allow the gas hydrofracking to occur upstate New York, especially in the poorer counties like Columbia County, you will destroy the environment, people's lives, the value of property. I'd like to see one politician in America have the courage to say no to the special interest groups. I have yet to find that one single politician. So I in time, they always capitulate. Here's the issue. The issue is that we have a medical mafia running in the United States. You have 900,000 physicians. When was the last time you saw them protest in public as a massive group against the $3.3 trillion, 18% of the gross domestic product we spend on health care? When did you see them complain when one bag of saline, which costs 44 cents, 44 pennies, and the patient is charged $800. And how many does a patient get of those in a day or a week that they're in the hospital? Why don't they protest the high cost of all of our medical procedures? Why don't they protest the drugs that have not been properly tested and are known not to be good and efficacious? Why don't they protest the enormous amount of of defensive procedures that are done to protect themselves against malpractice? Why don't they advocate for what I suggest, which is a policy where you cannot sue the doctor, the hospital? There is no fault medical care. Every doctor, every hospital, every health plan would pay into it, and therefore a doctor would only have to do those procedures necessary for the needs of the patient. We would save $200 to $300 billion and a lot of patients' lives. Think of how overused a lot of tests are, and procedures as well. Why don't we have that? Why don't we have them standing up against obesity in children, adult diabetes in children, populations where the children will not live as long as the parents? I can't answer that. They have to answer that. All I know is they haven't done it. They haven't done the right thing. But you have to look at the FDA, the AMA, and Big Pharma together, because these are the ones that represent the medical mafia. From Paula Fassa, Nature Society, quote, in case you're wondering why the term medical mafia is used occasionally to describe the unholy trinity of the AMA, the FDA, and Big Pharma, here it is. And by the way, all the people who I knew when I first came into the health field were all fully aware of this. And here's the deal. Prior to the early 20th century, there were thriving empirical medical practices. Herbal medicine, homeopathic medicine were far more popular than allopathic medicine, which at that time specialized in surgery. What caused all this to happen? Why do we have this iron grip over all medical procedures, and they're always wrong? It's because of Andrew Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, and John D. Rockefeller. These are the three criminals. These are the three absolute degenerates that financed, through their conglomeration, everything that we now know as medicine. How'd they do it? Well, it was the Rockefeller Institute that ensured the growth of the monopoly. It was John D. Rockefeller who said competition is a sin. Well, maybe to you it is, but for everyone else, it's how we grow. Today we don't grow because we don't have competition. We have monopolies because people can get debt, and they use debt, unlimited amounts of money, other people's money, in order to buy up competition. Small people can't get that advantage. They have to use their life savings or small loans. That's the difference. Even the newly formed antitrust laws at the beginning of the 20th century did not deter John D. Rockefeller from figuring out how to get around those restrictions with his oil business. He was the godfather of antitrust law criminal behavior. The early centerpiece of his empire was oil, but early on, he was aware of the expanding use of the pharmaceutical industry. His intention was simple: control the whole field of medicine. And the way you did that is you controlled the remedies, patented synthetic drugs. Now, natural remedies cannot be patented, but the patent is what brings the profit. So John D. Rockefeller started by donating to medical schools, beginning with the University of Chicago School of Medicine. And the stipulations were that only pharmaceutical-based medicine could be taught. Then he hired Abraham Flexner to go around every medical school in the country to evaluate the treatments. And from that came the 1906 Flexner Report, which was sufficient to get the lobbyist to say that we're going to have legislation that would license only physicians trained in patented chemical medicine, or what was called pharmacology and surgery. And that was it. Meanwhile, John D. Rockefeller recruited J.P. Morgan and Dale Carnegie as partners for buying a controlling share in the German drug cartel IG Farben. Now, the AMA had been in existence since 1847 as an allopathic physicians union, and it came into prominence as a ruling medical non-government agency from 1920 on, with exclusive power. It and it alone could revoke a medical license, and it set up the state medical boards, and it set up the accreditation of hospitals. So they simply stopped giving accreditation to any medical school like homeopathic medical schools, which had existed for a long time and were doing good work. The AMA would then set into practice a program of denigrating as quackery anything that did not follow its business model. If you competed with the Orthodox model, you were targeted. And that's how they did it. Morris Fishbein was a real sociopath, and he was the head of the AMA and the editor of its journal from 1924 to 1950. And he terrorized medical practitioners who strayed from accepted surgical and pharmaceutical dogma. Yet it was their ads, and I have them all, that showed actor Ronald Reagan saying that he gave Chesterfields every year to his friends. And there was one full-page ad in the Journal of the American Medical Association that showed a lucky strike, 47,000 doctors recommended, and Marlboro's is good for your throat, and on and on. Think of how many men and women, my mother and father included, all my aunts and uncles, they all smoked. Because the doctor smoked, because they were told it would calm their nerves and was good for them. It wasn't. Millions died because of it. Yet they're still around. Once in a while, the Sherman antitrust law would go against them, and they would lose. They're not on my favorite list because of the documents that I sent around and the two articles I wrote when we found that they had had a secret department of investigations in the basement of the AMA, and they had about 25 people working to full-time to discredit any alternative therapy. But they really hated chiropractor because there were more chiropractors than any other group out there, and so they had a whole dirty group. And when I got the documents from an inside source inside the AMA, and there were two of us who were given those documents, and then the chiropractors got them, and they sued, the AMA, and it went clear to the Supreme Court, and the AMA lost. When do you ever hear that mentioned? When do you ever hear that the AMA lost a Sherman Antitrust Act restraint of trade because of conspiracy? You don't hear it. Nope, you don't. And these are the people that they're quoting as being reputable. They're not reputable. That's why we have a medical mafia today. And that's why you have to be aware that good doctors exist in a bad system. Anytime you have more people dying each year from medical procedures than you do from a disease, like heart disease or stroke or cancer, and no one talks about it, yet the documents are there, the statistics are there, then that shows you they're not willing to be honest about what's going on. I'm Gary Knoll, and now the five top drugs for women. Now, excuse me, the five top herbs. First and foremost, I would have to say chaste tree. You might know it as Vitex, V-I-T-E-X, Agnus, A-G-N-U-S, Castus, C-A-S-T-U-S. It's a phenomenally important herb for women. It can help you with irregular menses, PMS, perimenopausal conditions, irregular abnormal uterine bleeding, dysmenorrhea, infertility. It helps with all those. And it's been around for a while, so that's something that should be used. And then we have black cohosh, C-O-H-O-S-H, yes. And it's extremely important for women who are losing their libido. A lot of women in perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause simply don't have the passion. It's probably the finest aphrodisiac for a woman. It also helps with depression, miscarriage, PMS, uterine fibroids, uterine prolapse, sleep disorders. Really good for you. I would definitely recommend it. And then I would also suggest St. John's wort. It's one of the best ways of dealing with depression and also helping a person relax and be able to sleep. It's also good for women who are having hormone imbalances. Ginger is phenomenal for women. It helps with nausea and vomiting and rheumatic disease and dysmenorrhea. And so in green tea, decaffeinated green tea helps prevent breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and genital warts. And it's good for asthma. It's good for your gums, for menopausal symptoms, for mental acuity, for weight loss, even protecting you from the effects of the sun. So those are the ones that are high up on my list that I believe that all women should be aware of and able to use. And finally, I'll get to some of the other issues I wasn't able to get to on another program, but this is from Allison McCabe. Quote, on March 29th, 2009, Robert Stewart stormed into a Pine Lake Health and Rehab nursing home in Carthage, North Carolina, and opened fire, killing 8 people and wounding 2. Stewart's apparent target was his estranged wife, who had worked as a nurse in the home. She hid in a bathroom and was unharmed. Stewart was charged with 8 counts of first-degree murder. If convicted, he would face the death penalty. Even though there was evidence that Stewart's actions were premeditated, Stewart's defense team successfully argued that since he was under the influence of Ambien, a sleep aid, at the time of the shooting, he was not in control of his actions. Instead of the charges sought by the prosecutors, Stewart was convicted on 8 counts of second-degree murder. He received 179 years in prison. Ambien, a member of a class of medications known as hypnotics, was approved by the FDA in 1992. It was designed for short-term use to combat insomnia and was a welcome change from the prevailing sleep aid at the time, Halcyon, which had been implicated in psychosis, suicide, and addiction, and had been banned in 6 countries. Ambien works by activating the neurotransmitter GABA and binding it to the GABA receptors in the same location as Xanax and Valium. The extra GABA activity triggered by the drug inhibits the neuron activity that is associated with insomnia. In other words, it slows down the brain. Ambien is extremely effective at initiating sleep, usually working within 20 minutes. It does not, however, have an effect on sustaining sleep unless it is taken in the controlled release form. Now, although Ambien prescribing information warned in small print that medications in the hypnotics class had occasional side effects, including sleepwalking, abnormal thinking, and strange behavior, these behaviors were listed as extremely rare, and any anecdotal evidence of sleep driving, sleep eating, and sleep shopping, all behaviors now associated with Ambien blackouts, were characterized as unusual quirks or attributed to mixing the medication with alcohol. It wasn't until Patrick Kennedy's 2006 middle-of-the-night car accident and subsequent explanation to arriving officers that he was running late for a vote that the bizarre side effects of Ambien began to receive national attention. Kennedy claimed that he had taken the sleep aid and had no recollection of the events that night. After its approval, Ambien quickly rose to dominance in the sleep aid market. Travelers swore by it to combat jet lag, and women who suffered more insomnia than men bought it in droves. Sanofi, Ambien's French manufacturer, made $2 billion in sales at its peak. In 2007, the generic version of Ambien was released, and at least then $2 per pill, it still remains one of the most prescribed drugs in America, outselling popular painkillers like Percocet. Now, shortly after the Kennedy incident, Ambien users sued Sanofi because of bizarre sleep-eating behaviors while on the drugs. According to Chan Alask, attorney for the class action suit, people were eating things like buttered cigarettes and eggs, complete with the shells, while under the influence of Ambien. Lask called people in this state Ambien zombies. As a result of the lawsuit and of increasing reports coming out about sleep driving, the FDA ordered all hypnotics to issue stronger warnings on their labels, in addition to giving consumers extra information so they could take the medication more carefully. The warning labels also gave legitimacy to Ambien, or zombie defense. In March 2011, Lindsay Schweigert took one Ambien before getting into bed at 6 p.m. Hours later, she woke up in custody with no idea how she had gotten there. In the following weeks, She pieced together the events that night. She'd gotten out of bed, drawn a bath, and left the house with her dog. She started driving to a local restaurant, but crashed into another car soon after leaving the house. Police described her as swaying and glassy-eyed. She failed a sobriety test and was charged with drunken driving and running a stoplight. She had a job that required a security clearance. She had never been in trouble with the law before and was terrified of losing her job and having a criminal record. Prosecutors initially wanted to impose a 6-month jail sentence in addition to other punishments, but her lawyer argued that her bizarre behavior on that night in question was a result of the medication, which warned right on the label, quote, after taking Ambien, you may get out of bed while not being fully awake and do an activity that you do not know you're doing. The next morning, you may not remember that you did anything during the night. Reported activities include driving a car, sleep driving, making and eating food, talking on the phone, having sex, sleepwalking. In fact, the lawyer argued, she should have been taken to a hospital, not to jail. Prosecutors dropped the charges and allowed her to plead to the lesser charge of careless driving, which meant that she could keep her security clearance. Her license was suspended for a year, and she had to pay $9,000 in legal fees. As a result of the Swigert verdict, an attorney successfully used the Ambien defense to overturn another conviction of a woman who was on Ambien and had similar experiences. Not all prosecutors will consider the Ambien defense, and its position within established criminal rules is tenuous. So the takeaway message is this. Why take it? You don't need it. There are better ways of getting a good night's sleep, including not eating within 3 hours going to bed, turning off all the lights so you have total darkness, taking 1 milligram of melatonin, 400 milligrams of calcium magnesium. That'll get you a good night's sleep. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program.